Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 18, delivered on October 26, 2017. The title of this lecture is Applications of Decision-Making Rules.
Tonight, Applications of Investment Decision-Making Rules. Now, this lecture is an extension of what I talked about on Tuesday evening, and I'm going to show you a couple of examples just to make sure that they'll be what I showed the last time. And I want to make sure that you have the skill sets necessary to use a calculator, a TI-83, 84, something along that line, to be able to do these calculations more quickly than you would if you had to do them by tables, as they do in accounting, or with basic arithmetic calculators. However, to start off, what I'm going to do is, two problems that are the same, part of the same decision-making framework. But before I start, let's just make sure that you understand that, or that you are refreshed on your knowledge of the NPV profile line. It's downward sloping. At low discount rates, a project will have a positive net present value. At some point, a project, the discount rate for the future expected cash flows would be sufficiently high that the project goes negative. The place where the NPV, the net present value, is negative, is zero rather, is the internal rate of return of the project, the IRR, the internal rate of return. That's just a refresher from what we did the last time. Now, and I'm just going to do a two-part problem here that in each of the parts of it, you're just basically doing the you're just doing the same thing that we've done before. And I'm bringing up a table, and I'll give you a chance to write it down. This is actually one of the problems in your online assessment. So to some extent, this is going to be helpful for you, give you a little leg up. There's some reason none of these lights actually kills. Oh, well, there you go. Write down those cash flows. And what I'm going to do here is, first of all, I'm going to find the NPV, the net present value, of each of these projects. And then I'm also going to find the internal rate of return of each of these projects. The first purpose is just so you see another example of doing this on a calculator. And the second purpose is to talk about mutually exclusive projects and decision-making when the projects are mutually exclusive. In other words, in this example, you have project A, and it has a cash outflow at the beginning of negative $48. Years 1, 2, 3, and 4 are respectively positive $25, positive $22, positive $22, and positive $14 of cash flow. Project B, in year zero, there is an investment for negative $98. In year one, the cash flow is positive $18. Two, positive $41. Three, positive $52. And four, positive $62. And all we're going to do in the first round is get the net present value of each of these and the internal rate of return. And so NPV of A And we'll get the internal rate of return of A. And we'll get the net present value, NPV, of B. And we'll get the internal rate of return of B. Not much. And this is almost like no-brainer stuff once you know how to do it on a calculator, which I encourage you to do after you've gotten the skill set down manually. So in this case, what I'm going to do, and let me scroll this up a little bit so I can get them both on the screen. First of all, turn on your calculator. And we're going to say apps, finance, and we're going to use facility 7, which is NPV. You can scroll down and hit enter, or you can just key in 7 and you go back to the main screen, NPV, open parentheses. Now, we are going to need a discount rate to get NPV. So for this problem, I'm going to use a discount rate of 5.3%. You with me? There. So just hammering in the numbers here, we're going to key in the open parenthesis, 5.3, comma, negative $48, comma. Now we open braces, second parenthesis, and that's the brace. And then we put in the cash flows, 25, comma, 22, comma, 22, comma, 14. And then we close the braces, second parenthesis, and then close the parenthesis. And we hit enter. And we get $25.81 net present value for the first project. Yeah. Now we're going to do a trick to get the internal rate of return. Instead of keying in the whole mess again, and this isn't too bad, but when you've got a lot of cash flows, a lot of big numbers, this really saves your bacon. I'm going to go second enter. That allows me to edit my formula. And I'm going to go up here back to the NPV. Move the cursor back up to NPV. And I'm going to go apps, finance. Now, 8 is internal rate of return, as you can see. Just key in 8 or go down to 8 and hit enter. And look, it replaced the NPV with the IRR. Now, remember, IRR, you don't put in an interest rate, a discount rate, because that's what you're calculating. So I'm going to delete that and then just hit enter. And we find the internal rate of return of project A is 28.87%. Like that. And now we're going to do project B. And again, a lot of what I'm doing here is just to, so you have a couple more examples so that you can get the skill set down. I'm going to go app for the net present value of project B, apps, finance, 7, and you come back NPV. And you're going to key in your discount rate, 5.3%. And then we're going to put it in the comma and the negative cash flow, negative $98. And then the comma, and you open the braces, second parenthesis, and then you just hammer in the positive cash flows. 18, comma, 41, comma, 52, comma, 62, 62. Close the braces, second parenthesis, close the parentheses, and we hit enter. And we get a, let me see, is that going to be right? Yeah, $51. Yeah, $51.04. Like that. And to get the internal rate of return, I mean, if you want to key in the numbers again, go ahead. But all I'm going to do is edit the formula right above the cursor, second, enter, and then I'm going to go again back up to NPV, move the cursor back to there, and then I'm going to go apps, finance, and go down to the internal rate of return function, 8, IRR, and then again, you delete the internal rate of return function does not have an interest rate. You're finding the discount rate. And then you just hit enter. 22.42%. So there's that. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. Clear. There's your result. Now, these are, in this case, suppose that Project A and Project B are mutually exclusive. Look at what is interesting. You have to choose one of the two. By the net present value approach or decision-making rule, you will choose Project B because it has a higher net present value. In other words, Project B will enhance the company's value by $51.04. Project A will enhance the company's value by 25.81%. So by the net present value rule, we're choosing B. It enhances shareholder value more. But look at the internal rate of return. If you use the internal rate of return rule, then you choose Project A instead of Project B. This is a classic example of where the two decision-making rules will give you conflicting decisions. By NPV, we choose B. By IRR, we choose A. Now, right off the bat, if you are in a conflicting situation, you use the NPV rule. Use net present value. Do not use internal rate of return. And I'm going to show you a little bit of what, the why of it here. Notice that Project A, which the internal rate of return rule says is the one you go with, has a front loading of its positive cash flows. In other words, this is a project that starts out as a hero and then it peters out, it tails off. Project B, on the other hand, starts out looking kind of lousy, compared to A especially, but then it builds steam over time. The internal rate of return rule will more favorably treat projects that are winners at the beginning and less like winners later on. The NPV rule, although it still does that to some extent, it will be less susceptible to being impressed by early flash-in-the-pan cash flows. Think about it this way. A would be a fad product, a product that you'd have a year or two of good times, and then it would no longer be interesting. It would no longer be a success. You've seen these commercials on television for these infomercials for buy this stupid thing or buy that stupid thing. And it's a flash in the pan for a couple of years and then it goes away. I'm trying to think of some of the ones that have been recently in those infomercials. They get popular for a while and then they just die away. What was? Yeah, yeah. Then there was that weird one, that shake weight thing. What the heck was that? That was, ew. But you see, those are the kind of products that just are winner for a year or two or three, and then they just die away. When you're looking at a project B, you're looking at more of a project where you have to work on it. You build awareness of the product over a period of time, and you build brand or product loyalty over a period of time. So you're not going to get spectacular results right off the bat. It's going to take some years for the product to be accepted by the public. It's going to be something that is more enduring. As the saying went in a famous TV series, which was actually stolen from the writer Oscar Wilde, the quick money is the McMansion in Sarasota. The long-term money is the old brick house that stands the test of time. So the NPV rule is more likely to favor those kinds of brick houses that stand up over time. And the IRR rule would be more likely to reward the McMansion that lasts for a few years to impress people before the roof falls in on you. So there is the mutually exclusive decision-making framework. And again, you choose the net present value rule if there is a conflict on them. And more importantly, there is a very clear interpretation of net present value. This amount of money is how much the company's value is enhanced by the project. The internal rate of return does have an interpretation, but it's not as clean, not as visually obvious to the end users that we talk to. Now, I take you to something else. I'll turn back up the lights, and I'm going to bring up to you very briefly a dark, dark subject from your past. It's called algebra. Specifically, the algebra of polynomials. I don't know if you ever remember it, but the degree of a polynomial is the highest power to which that independent variable occurs. So, for example, y equals 3x plus 2. The highest power of the variable is 1, so this is a degree 1 polynomial. Y equals 5x squared minus 2x plus 8. That's a degree 2 polynomial. Y equals 8x cubed minus 3x squared plus 5x minus 4. That's a degree 3 polynomial. Now, these things, trust me, there's a point that I'm getting to here. Now, these things have characteristics of them. Each degree polynomial has characteristics. So, for example, a degree 1 polynomial has only one place where it can cross the x-axis. We say it has one root. A degree 2 polynomial could cross the x-axis twice. Okay? Degree 2. It might not. It might miss the axis, but it has at most two roots. And a degree 3 polynomial has at most three roots. In other words, three places where it crosses the x-axis, et cetera, up the line with higher degree polynomials. Well, that's all nice and kind of interesting. However, it does have an important interpretation in the subject we're talking about here. The NPV profile looks like this if there is only one change in the sign of the cash flow. In other words, there's a negative, and then there are all positives after that. Unfortunately, as can very well happen in the real world, if there are two changes in sign of the cash flows, in other words, you put money in, negative, money comes out good for a while, then you have to put more money in, negative, before good money will come back out again. The NPV profile line looks like that. These are polynomials. So the problem, though, is that if you calculate an internal rate of return when there is just a simplistic one change in cash flow, you're fine. But if you have a more realistic cash flow where there's negative, then some positives, then another negative, you get multiple internal rates of return, and none of them mean anything. You can key this into your calculator, IRR, and then put in your negative cash flow and all that kind of stuff. It'll give you an answer. It'll be happy to give you an answer, but it will have no meaning whatsoever. The calculator, what calculators like this do? They take a guess at where the answer is. So they say, oh, well, we're going to start guessing right here. Oh, well, the NPV is positive there. So that means that what we'll have to do is we will have to see how it's positive right there. Okay, so the calculator will say, all right, let's go this way because we have to find the negative. Okay, it finds the negative. Okay, there. And then it starts searching back and forth until it gets its accuracy that it wants. But it does not know, it doesn't even have a sense that there was another internal rate of return. If the calculator had guessed down here, it would have said, oh, well, the NPV is... guess is right here. Oh, well, the NPV is negative. So it starts going this way, can't find a thing. So it starts going this way. Oh, it found a positive. So it just works its way back. Here it is. But it doesn't mean anything. The IRR has no meaning if it is a 2-sign, 3-sign change, anything like that. It has no meaning whatsoever. So in other words, realistically, the internal rate of return is a child's tool. It works to a certain extent when you've got one cash flow change, but if you get more than one cash flow change, well, then the internal rate of return has no meaning anyway. Although it could spit out an answer for you, it'll be happy to. Unfortunately, there are companies, many companies, and they learn this in their finance programs or an MBA. They are absolutely dedicated to internal rate of return. If they are aware that the internal rate of return method falls apart with multiple cash flows, they don't go to NPV. They go to a trick on the internal rate of return. It's called the modified internal rate of return, MIRR. It is a real pain to calculate manually. In fact, in Excel, it's easy. There's a function called MIRR to do it. But by hand, it is a real pain in the backside. I typed up a quick problem here. I'm going to do one manually and show you what a pain in the back end it is, and then point out that I'm going to use actually the algebra calculator to start with, and then I'm going to finish up with the TI-83. I could have done it with both of them, but I just want the big calculator so you can see it more. And let me write out a cash flow profile that looks, Okay, cash flow period. Okay. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And why I chose to do 6 periods is actually beyond me. Cash flow is 5,000 negative to begin with. Then this project starts to bring in some money. Period 1, $1,000. Period 2, $2,000. But in period 3, we have to put more money into the project. So cash flow goes negative at $1,500 on period 3. And then we recover, and we have $3,000 in period 4, $1,000 in period 5, and then $500 in period 6 with a salvage value of $250. Okay. Now, remember, I'm doing the salvage value. Just to remind you, don't ever forget, just put that stupid salvage value right there on the end, the last cash flow, so it's not 500, it's $750. I'm just throwing that in there to remind you. That's how you do it if there's a salvage value. Oh, God, I don't want to do that. Okay, here's how MIRR works. You need two percentages, two interest rates. One is the cost of capital. You'll see some people call this the cost of financing. And you are also going to need another one, which is the reinvestment rate. The cost of capital is how much it costs you to borrow the money to do the project. The reinvestment rate is how much you make when you take the cash, the positive cash flows, and you do something with them. Okay, so let's say the cost of capital here is 6.5%. And the reinvestment rate is 7.5. In other words, we borrow money to do the project at 6.5%. When we get money, when the project is coughing up money for us, we can reinvest that at 7.5%. Now, normally these would be a little more more widely separated, but oh God, here we go. Now, here's how you do it. What you do is you take the present value of the negative cash flows at the cost of capital. You take the positive cash flows and you find their future value at the reinvestment rate. Then we're going to do something with those two numbers once we've got them. So, first of all, let's get the present value of these cash flows, the negative cash flows, at the cost of capital. In order to do that, okay, I'm going to do it here. This one isn't too bad. Look, what we're going to do is we're going to take the present value. We're going to take negative $5,000, which is occurring right now, plus negative $1,500 discounted back times 1 plus 0.065 to the negative What is that? 1, 2, 3 periods. That will be the present value of the negative cash flows. We're discounting those back to the present at the cost of capital, how much it costs us to borrow the money to keep the project moving. So in this case, we would have 5,000 posneg plus 1,500 posneg times 1.065 to the negative third power, was that? Negative third equals negative $6,241.77. $241.77. That's the present value of the negative cash flows. Now to do the positives, we're going to take those forward to the year, to the end of year six. So in this case, we'll have to do, the first one is $1,000 times 1.075 at the rate of reinvestment, what we can get for that money that's coming out of that project. And that would be to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 periods, to the fifth power, plus $2,000 more times 1.075 to the fourth power, plus $3,000, watch it here, times 1.075 to the second power, because see, we have only two periods left, 1, 2. Watch it, you're skipping over the years that were negative. Plus 1,000 times 1,000 times 1.075 to the first power, plus that tail end of $750, which is right there at the end. Okay, this is way too much like work. So doing that, and believe me, in Excel, this is quite easy to do, and I'm almost of a mind to show you very quickly how to do it there. Excuse me. Okay, so now, just getting it done, 1,000 times 1.075 to the fifth power, plus 2,000, and please yell if you see me not key something in correctly, times 1.075 to the fourth power, plus 3,000 times 1.075 to the second power, plus 1,000 times 1.075 to the first power, plus that final 750, which occurs right at the end, so you don't have to future value it. $9,398.44. $9,398.44. Now, see that profile, cash flow profile right there? We have now reconstructed it. Period, cash flow. Period zero, negative 624177. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are now zeros. And in period six, you've got positive $9,398.44. There. Now, getting this off the board, we can go and use the calculator's IRR function. Apps, finance, internal rate of return. We start out with a negative 6241.77, comma. Now we open the braces and year 10, comma, year 20, comma, year 30, comma, year 40, comma, year 50, comma, and then at the end, the 9,000 in year 6, 9398, 44. Close the braces, close the parentheses. Get that down. Make sure that you've got that, or if you're keying on your calculator. Pain in the royal backside. Okay, you ready? Enter. 7.06% internal rate of MIRR. Is 7.06%. There you go. That's all there is to it. Okay? It's a pain in the royal back end, but I'm going to show you something here. I'm going to show you how you do this in Excel. It's actually a lot faster. And real quick here. We have a... we actually have kind of a mission going on right now that we are trying to bring more Excel into our finance classes. And it's pretty hard to do in a class like this, but I do try to show you an example from time to time. So I'm going to do period in A, and then in B I'm going to do cash flow. And then I'm going to go over here, 0, 1 for the periods, and then take that down to 6. And I'm showing you little tricks as I do this. This is called populating with the handle. You can populate a series of things that way. Now, the cash flow was what? Negative 5,000. Okay, negative 5,000. Then it was 1,000. Really? How hard is that? Oh, that's right. I can't do that way. 1,000. Then 2,000. Then negative 1,500. And then we came back positive 3,000. 1,000. And then $750. Now we're going to do the modified internal rate of return equals MIRR. The values here, just highlight them all, then comma, you put in your cost of capital, I don't think you should put in parentheses here, I'm just trying to remember this, and then your reinvestment rate. Now, I might be wrong about this. I might have to put percentages after those two numbers, but I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to. Okay, 6.5%. And that's the beauty of finances. If you get a wrong answer, it's going to look spectacularly wrong. Format that for two decimal places. Yep. See how much easier that is? I mean, that's just almost like that's a no-brainer kind of thing. Just remember to put those in percentages. Yeah. Okay, that is how you do an MIRR. It's a lot faster if you just have a few extra skills in Excel. You can do these just lightning fast. One interesting thing, though, by the way, the net present value. Let's look at net present value. Doesn't require all this bizarre stuff. You just pour in the numbers. Equals NPV, open parentheses, and then you key in the rate. Now, in this case, what you would be keying in is the financing rate, 6.5%. And then the values, close the parentheses. See how much easier it is? And I mean, right now, this clearly, well, not clearly, this is a positive net present value project. It's not spectacularly positive, but we don't care about that. We would accept this project at a discount rate of 6.5%. We would say, okay, this is fine, 6.5%, because it adds value to the company. And whenever you are doing these problems, the question is always going to be, does the project add value to the company? And don't go with that idea, well, we want the ones that add lots of value. That's not how the enduring corporation should function. You're not looking for the Hail Mary pass down to the end zone. You're not looking for the super awesome superhero. You're looking for the projects that are just going to build value over time for the operations of the company. And in this case, this project actually does build value for the company over time, interestingly enough. So, and there's another part to this, too. The last thing, and I'm doing a little Excel tonight because I have been derelict in showing you how to use Excel, and you can certainly use this in your homework. And there's a caution there, by the way. I'm doing helping people with their resumes. I've got a lot of people putting on their resume, under their skills, Excel. And that is not something you want to put until you have some real serious Excel skill sets. Because you should, if you say, I can do Excel on your resume, you're going to be surprised. They're going to think, oh, you can do pivot tables, you can do dashboards, you can do macros and VBS, you can pull in data from external sources and refresh your spreadsheets every time they're opened. You can do all those things. Most people who say they see an Excel, corporate Excel sheet for the first time, it doesn't even look like Excel. The skills that are so advanced and the sheets that you'll work with. And it takes time to develop those. And so I would strongly recommend you say, don't say I am good at Excel until you really are. And the same thing goes with resume. If you say, well, I can do Word. Well, yeah, everyone can do Word and they can also go to the bathroom. That's not an impressive skill. Well, I can do the internet. Well, yes, my cat can do the internet too. Make sure you actually have a skill set that is at corporate level before you say you do, especially with Excel, because this one is, I'm showing you just real basic stuff right now. If I were doing this for real, I'd be doing all kinds of weird things in the background to make these, but I want to show you the basics first. Okay, now, just one quick thing. Let me do one more tab here. and to show you something. Suppose a company has to make a decision on whether or not to purchase new equipment that will save them money over the old equipment. Or they could choose to hold on to the old equipment for their budgeting horizon. In this case, let's say it's 6 years. Old technology, new technology. Well, I have to add in a line here. Okay. Period. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to do 0, 1, and then watch this trick. If you don't know this trick, this is called populating by handle. You write 0 and 1, and then you take it out the appropriate number of years. And then you can center it if you wish to make it pretty. Okay, so now, if we use the old technology, we are simply going to have our maintenance costs. Let's say that the maintenance cost right away, there's no investment, no maintenance cost. At the end of year one, it's going to cost us $1,200 in maintenance costs for this old technology. It gets a little worse as time goes on. $1,500 in costs in year two. $2,000 in year three. Oops, negative $2,000 year three. Negative $2,250 in year four. $3,000 in year five. I just did that so that I'd see if anyone was noticing. That's good, you caught it. I wanted to see if any. Anyway, moving along here, $3,400. Okay. Now, with the new technology is going to cost us $5,500 up front. But then it's going to cost only $400 a year in maintenance for the first couple of years, and then maybe go up to maybe $700 in year three, $1,000 in year four, $1,200 in year five, and let's say $1,300 in year six. Okay. Here's how we can do it. It's actually quite easy. We will use the cost of financing. Well, let's not do it there. Cost of capital, because this is money out of our pockets. We would use the cost of capital, how much it costs us to raise funds to do things. Even maintenance will work this way. So what we're going to do is we're just going to do the net present value, NPV, of, equals NPV of. Whoa, I screwed up. I didn't write in my cost of capital here. Let's say our cost of capital is 7%. Okay, so now equals NPV, the rate, which would be that, comma, the values. So the net present value of holding the old equipment is going, it's going to be negative 7,400, and we expect it to be a negative. Now let's do the same thing. I'm going to do a nasty little trick here. I'm going to make B5 an absolute reference, hit F4. That means if I copy the formula, it doesn't change that. Now watch. I can just handle and copy it down as long as I made. See, if I don't do that, then it's going to look for the next row for this after 7%. But if I make that 7% an absolute reference, then it won't shift it as it shifts down the rest of it. Well, look at this. You actually, it costs less as a present value to keep your old technology over your budgeting horizon than it does to consider the alternative. Now, you notice here, interestingly enough, I'm going to write something here, equals this minus this. In other words, the cash flow with the old technology minus cash flow equals this minus this. Now, I'm going to bring up to you, I'm going to grab the handle and pull it over here for the six periods. 800 plus 11, negatives of these are 800 plus 1100 is 1900. 1900 plus 1300 is 3200. 4200 5250. The people selling you the old technology are going to say the new technology pays for itself in about 4 years. Do you see that? If you add up these cost savings, see how in year one you save $800 with the new technology over the old technology. In year two, you save $1,100 with the new technology over the old technology. In year three, you save $1,300 with the new technology over the old technology. If you go along, you'll see that by the end of year four, you have almost pretty much paid for the new technology with the savings that you've generated. And they're going to try to sell you the new technology by telling you that. This new technology pays for itself in about 4 years. And don't you believe it. That's not what you should be doing. Because if you do it by present value, you find out that the old technology actually has a present value of future expected costs that is lower than the present value of the future expected costs from the new technology. In fact, in this case, by keeping the old technology, you are preventing about $461 of lost value. Again, let me repeat that. By retaining the old technology over your planning horizon of 6 years, your company is actually keeping about $461 or so from being lost by the company. So the whole thing that is done these days, well, if you buy this new heating and air conditioning system, it will pay for itself in 42 months over your old system. Or if you put in solar panels, they will pay for themselves in savings on your electric bill in 5 years. That is not the measure you should use. You should actually ask yourself, what is the present value of cost from keeping my old system? What is the present value of the cost, the net present value, of the cost from buying the new system? you will find that over your planning horizon, which if you're a homeowner, that's about 7 years because most people flip their home in about 7 years. That's the average time. So if that system over a 7-year cost analysis does not have a lower negative net present value, a less of a negative net present value than keeping your old system, you say, no, I understand. It saves me money every month, but it does not save me enough every month to overcome the upfront cost of it over my planning horizon. So that's the metric that you want to use. Now, I'm hoping you kind of got what I did there with Excel. I was just sort of doing it as I went along. But it's worth it for you to know these skills because this takes you a little ways up. Just being able to key in data like I was doing, copy formulas, use absolute reference cells, saves you a lot of time, and then you can begin to say, well, I've got a few more Excel skills than the average person out there on the internet. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.